Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is Dr. Jack Rasmus and Alternative Visions. Okay, I'm back after a couple of weeks layoff due to a medical situation. Not COVID, but nonetheless. Back in the saddle here, and we'll pick up with the news of the week and the big picture. Of course, in a recent week here, the big picture is the passage of the American Rescue Plan, which is Biden's fiscal stimulus, purported to be $1.9 trillion. We'll dissect that and show it's much less, actually. And we'll talk about that. And in the context of the fiscal stimulus that's been proposed and implemented over the past year, you know, there have been three fiscal stimulus bills. The first in March of 2020, about a year ago, was called the CARES Act. That wasn't much of a stimulus. It wasn't really intended to be a stimulus. It was intended to be what's called a mitigation. In other words, a bill that puts a floor under the collapse, buys some time for the real stimulus to follow. Of course, the real stimulus did not follow under Trump. And we had, 8 months? 8 months of really do-nothing economic response by the government. Well, Trump was essentially do-nothing on everything except trying to get himself reelected. We really had no government. The fourth quarter of last year, the economy really relapsed once again, and they had to throw some more money in the pot at the end of December, another $900 billion, extending some of the benefits that existed under the CARES Act last March. But by then, the economy was so weak, $900 billion just bought some time. And that's all that bill was really intended, passed December 27th. Another mitigation bill to buy another couple months, most of the effects of which wore off by mid-March, and hence filling that gap now, is the third bill, the American Rescue Plan, Biden's purported $1.9 trillion. So all in all, you know, we've had these three fiscal rescue plans here, and they've the first two clearly were mitigation, buy some time, not really sufficient in magnitude or in their composition. In other words, was it tax cuts or was it actual spending? Not really effective enough in magnitude or composition terms to really generate a sustained economic recovery. Those two fiscal bills mitigated, in other words, prevented the economic effects of the past year from being worse than they actually were. And of course, they were record level contractions. That's the first point. Keep in mind, these were not stimulus bills. These were buy some time bills. They bought a little bit of time, but the economy at the end of last year was really in a deep negative state. And then we have the current Biden American Rescue Plan, ARP, I'll call it ARP, that was supposed to give us a real stimulus. But as I will explain here, it's really, at least for the first year, not much more than the other bills. No, it's not all that stimulus. It's really a kind of mitigation. And that's why, we've got Biden and the Democrats really focusing now on an infrastructure spending, which is longer term. If we don't get an infrastructure spending bill that's significant and which focuses on investment, infrastructure investment that is heavily labor intensive, not long-term capital intensive, then we aren't going to get a sustained recovery either. We will see that this current ARP is just another mitigation bill. And that will mean we will have had three mitigation bills and no real stimulus bill. Now, I'm not going to predict what's going to happen with the infrastructure spending. It's a wild card. But they're talking about it, and we'll see. You know, Biden has proposed these two bills, you know, the stimulus here, the ARP and infrastructure, two sides of one coin, as going big. Going big. Well, why is he saying going big this time? You know, because Obama did not go big. Obama went minimal. And the 2009 Obama stimulus plan proposal was a big flop. Let's go back and put Biden's bill in perspective with Obama's bill. Obama's bill was $787 billion in January 2009. Proposed. Not enough. In terms of magnitude, not enough, given the crisis at that time. In terms of its composition, not enough. What do we mean by that? Composition means how much of it is in tax cuts, and tax cuts for whom? Businesses, investors, or households. How much of it is in actual government spending programs? And in the composition, Obama's bill was a failure as well. Here's why. Right? $787 billion wasn't enough, but in composition terms, $300 billion of that almost went for tax cuts. Now, tax cuts do not quickly stimulate the economy, especially if they're business tax cuts. Business can get the tax cut benefit by waiting until December 31st before they actually do anything. Or they could take the tax cut and not actually do anything in terms of investment. They don't necessarily have to in a lot of those provisions. It was a freebie tax cut, mostly for businesses. So a lot of that $300 billion in tax cuts got hoarded, didn't get spent. So therefore, it had no real effect on the economy. The same thing you can say for another $280 billion in the Obama rescue plan. That went to state and local governments. Those state and local governments were supposed to use it to hire people. They hoarded it and kept laying people off. So the $787 billion quickly was a flop, and they had to throw more money into the pot. They threw another $25 billion in, later in 2009 supplement in spending for what was called cash for clunkers. That means we'll pay you to get your old car off the road and buy a new one. And another $25 billion or so for first-time home buyers assistance. Okay, so that's really $50 billion on top of the $787 billion. But it, too, was not enough. Too little, too late. All the way along the line. What happened was, of course, by 2010, the economy was still in trouble. Because there was enough fiscal stimulus there. But what Obama did, instead of upping the ante and going more aggressively on social program spending, did just the opposite. He decided to give even more tax cuts to business. And he extended the Bush tax cuts, which was supposed to expire in 2010, he extended them two more years through a cost of $900 billion. In exchange, he gave $55 billion more for unemployment benefits because jobs were still going south. This kind of ineffective fiscal stimulus bill under Obama kind of taught the Democrats a lesson. And that's why you hear Biden and the Dems talking about, oh, this time we got to go big. We got to go big. We got to spend more than $787 billion. By the way, that decision to go $787 billion was actually cutting out $150 billion in consumer household tax cuts that Obama did on the advice of Larry Summers, who once again is an advisor to Biden, saying, oh, we can't go too big, Joe. You know, don't go too big. Well, you know, Summers is the inside guy for the big banks, and he reflects that perspective. To sum up, you know, Obama's recovery program was a bust. $787 billion, maybe $50 billion more for a couple programs, another $50 billion for more unemployment benefits, you know, well less than $1 trillion net. And then in August of 2011, Obama agrees to cut spending by $1.5 trillion. So he gives $1 trillion in one hand and he takes $1.5 trillion away in the other hand. That's what happened in August of 2011. Why did that happen? Well, because the Dems by then had lost both houses of Congress. They got swamped in 2010 midterm elections in Congress, in the House, lost 63 seats. Whoa. Blood on the ground. And then it was Mitch McConnell all the way for the next, 8 years, doing his dirty work of no, no, no to anything except rewarding his rich buddies, you see. And of course, the failure to grow the economy after 2009-10 in anything except a very weak way. For example, we didn't get jobs back that we had in 2007 before the crisis. We didn't get the jobs back until 2015, maybe 16, I forget which number, 15 or 16. In other words, it took like 7 years to get just back the level of jobs that we had in 2007 before the crisis. 7 years. And then the jobs came back at lower wages and pay. Well, you know, are we going to have a repeat here? Are we going to see the same thing? Well, the Dem says we're going to go big. Are they going big? Well, it doesn't take much to go bigger than Obama. You know, Obama really paved the way for Trump in 2016 as well. So these economic policies have political consequences. And if the Dems don't really go big, actually go big this time, then 2022 will be a repeat of 2010. And the Democrats will lose Congress. And then, you know, it's Mitch McConnell time all over again for the next 2 years until they run another Trump-like candidate in 2024. 2008-9-10 was a Great Recession. Great recessions are deeper and longer and are associated with long-term slow job recovery. And the question remains, are we going to now experience the same thing in this Great Recession 2.0 that began last March? Are we on the same trajectory? If we don't have really true fiscal stimulus, we will be. Yes, we will be. And certainly if we have another financial crisis over the next 2 years, we will be. It's going to take a long time to get the jobs back. Let's talk about jobs a little bit. You know, in show after show and radio interview after radio interview I've been giving the last several months, the same issue always comes up. What is the true unemployment level? Over and over again. You know, if you listen to the mainstream media, they say, oh, we got a 6.2 unemployment rate and 9.5 million people are still jobless. Well, that's such bullshit. I mean, even their own numbers contradict that. What are their numbers? There's 19.5 million people collecting unemployment benefits. And that was 10 million more than they say is 9.5 million unemployed. There's 4 million people plus who've dropped out of the labor force. Well, you're unemployed if you drop out of the labor force. There's another, you know, 1 million to 2 million people who are on, quote, furlough, taking care of the kids' education that the Labor Department doesn't consider unemployed. And they've said so themselves. Oh, we made an error. But they haven't changed it. So you got somewhere between 23, 25 million people still jobless. And look at the new unemployment claims every week. Well over a million every week since the beginning of the year and rising now. Rising. The numbers just came out again. You know, almost 800,000 under the state unemployment benefits program and another 400,000 plus under the special federal pandemic unemployment benefit program. 1.2, 1.3 trillion every week. New claims. Is that a recovering economy when you got over a million people filing new claims? A study was recently done in California and what on the unemployment benefits. And what we see is that people who got laid off last March, April, when the pandemic began, went back to work in the fall for a while, and now they're being laid off again. And yet we hear, oh, we're going to have such a good first quarter of 2021. The economy is rebounding nicely as it opens up everywhere. Well, certainly not rebounding in terms of jobs. More people are filing claims than ever before. What the hell's going on? Well, something must be wrong with the darn statistics. Or maybe it's just the assumptions that go into creating a statistic that's a nice number that they can cherry pick out of their basket of stats and feed to the media. And so we get, 6.2% unemployment, only 9 million people out of jobs. But you look elsewhere in their own data, and no, it's 23, 24 million. That's 15% unemployment rate. That's Great Recession levels. Okay, so it's useful to put this thing in historical context of what happened in 2008, 2009 and after, and to put it in the context of, you know, don't believe all the stats that you hear. And, you know, it's not necessarily that there's a big conspiracy to lie about this stuff. They don't have to lie about it. They just create what purports to be scientific data and statistics full of erroneous assumptions to get the kind of numbers they want. You know, they're just playing around with the assumptions and the statistical methodologies in order to get what they want. And that's what they feed the media, and that's what the media feeds you. So we get this fiction that, we got a recovery going on underway here. While more people are filing for unemployment, some recovery. Oh, we got a nice recovery going on in the financial asset markets. Don't get me wrong. Nice, you know, keeps rising. If you got your money in financial assets, stocks, bonds, and stuff, you know, you're doing, well, at least stocks, derivatives, right? Bitcoins, cryptos, you're doing well, doing very well. Okay, so let's look at becoming a main theme in the mainstream media, whether it's business media, talking heads, etc. And that is, the concern that deficits now because of the three spending bills are creating inflation, which is going to accelerate. That's an argument against social program spending and stimulus bills. That's an argument against that, you know, that people like McConnell and Rand Paul and all those others keep throwing up, saying, it creates deficits. Well, these are the same guys who in January 2018 quickly passed Trump's tax cuts that whacked the U.S. budget, led to significant deficits. They weren't concerned then about deficits and inflation, no. Only when you do social program spending are they concerned. Well, how much tax cuts? Once again, we see how the media cherry picks and downplays the numbers. Well, they said it was $1.5 trillion, the Trump tax cuts passed in January 2018. By the way, to digress, that was pushed through Congress in less than 2 weeks, rammed right through Republican-controlled House and Senate hearings, put on the floor, and voted on within a week. Oh, talk about pushing you know, nuclear options here, right? Only 50% vote needed. Yeah, when the Republicans don't want to deal with the 60 vote rule, you know, they go right around it. And now the Democrats are doing it and they can't take it, you see. They don't like that. Well, they do it themselves. $4 trillion in Trump tax cuts over a decade. $4 trillion, folks, not $1.5 trillion, because they downplayed how much U.S. multinational corporations were getting tax cuts offshore, weren't included in those numbers. They assumed in those numbers that the tax cuts would generate such a recovery, such a robust recovery, we would have no recessions for another 10 years, and that would generate so much economic activity, and therefore more tax revenues would offset the $4 trillion. That's what they assume. Of course, we fell into the worst recession in the first year of that, right? Or second year after it, right? Yeah. And the tax cut was a big fiction, saying, oh, it will create jobs by creating investment, right? It will stimulate business investment, and that will create hiring and jobs. Well, in the first year after the passage in 2018 and 19, what happened? Business investment declined despite getting huge tax cuts, creating another fiction that business tax cuts create jobs. No evidence of that whatsoever. Okay. But the other fiction that I want to talk about now is this mainstream economics idea that deficits lead to inflation, because if you got a deficit, you're spending too much money, right? And inflation is too much money chasing too few goods, right? You've heard that maybe. Another economic ideology here means fiction, not really observable in reality. Too much money chasing too few goods. Too much government spending, right, creates inflation. Deficits cause inflation. Well, that's what you're hearing now, right? You're hearing a lot of that nonsense coming out. Oh, we got inflation coming. We got inflation coming. We're spending too much. Well, what's the empirical or observable facts behind that alleged causal relationship between deficits and inflation? Well, let's look at it. U.S. deficits and the total U.S. debt, deficits, you know, produce the debt. In the year 2000, was $4 trillion total U.S. debt. By the time Obama took office, it was $9 trillion. And by 2019, before the actual COVID thing hit, it was $21 trillion. So we had quintupled the deficits from $4 trillion in 2000, measured in the debt. We had doubled it by 2008, and we more than doubled that by 2020 to $21 trillion. What happened to inflation over this period? You know, we got like a 400% increase in government debt, federal government debt, because of deficits. By the way, under Trump, we had deficits every year. We're supposed to have a booming economy, but we had deficits every year, over $1 trillion. Well, 1 year, I think it was like $900 billion. Because of the tax cuts, the business tax cuts, Trump tax cuts. By the way, those tax cuts were written by two guys from Goldman Sachs that were brought into the Trump administration. Gary Cohn, and Steve Mnuchin, both from Goldman Sachs, wrote that entire bill behind closed doors and then dumped it on Congress and said vote within a week in 2017, December. That's it. And they rammed it through. What a boondoggle. Trillions and trillions of dollars, as if big investors and corporations and capitalists needed more money. Well, let's get back to looking at the deficit here. The point is, you know, U.S. inflation over this 20-year period, and especially since Obama, has been virtually nil. We doubled the deficits from 2008, more than doubled, to 2019. We doubled the deficits from just under $10 trillion to just over $20 trillion, and inflation was less than 1.5% per year. Well, wait a minute. If you're going to double the deficits and deficits cause inflation, well, shouldn't the price level have increased by 100% or significantly? No, it didn't at all. No inflation because of deficits. No inflation in goods and services, real goods and services, because the deficits did not really result in spending by the government that boosted the incomes of average consumers who would then spend the money, and that would stimulate price rises in goods and services, you know, things you and I buy all the time, goods and services, you know, from food to gas, you know, to electricity, whatever, goods and services we're talking about. No evidence whatsoever deficits caused an increase in inflation. None. Zip, zero, nada. But we still get that old idea peddling around that inflation is caused by too much spending and too much money chasing too few goods. Where does that come from? That's an 18th century notion. 18th century. It's called the quantity theory of money, right? That if you increase the amount of money in the economy, it's going to end up causing inflation. Called the quantity theory of money. Nonsense. Right? Then, nonsense now. No correlation, let alone causation, no correlation between the price level and deficits and debt. None. But boy, Rand Paul, McConnell, and all these guys are using that old shibboleth to say, oh, the Biden bill is too much, it's too much. And they'll say that when it comes to infrastructure spending as well. Right? The deficit last year went up $3.1 trillion. The deficit in 2020, $3.1 trillion deficit. Well, hell, even under Trump, before all this, it was almost $1.5 trillion because of the tax cuts. Oh, by the way, the tax cuts continued during this. And more was spent in tax cuts for business as well. I'll explain. The projection for the deficit this year, 2021, rather, is $2.2 trillion. So $3.1 trillion deficit last year compares to, you know, $1 to $1.5 trillion deficits every year since Obama. Yeah, it's up, right? And this year it's supposed to go down to $2.2 trillion. Even though Obama is spending $1.9 trillion, it's going down to $2.2 trillion from $3.1 trillion. Okay. Look, the deficits since Obama are caused, 60% of the cause is tax revenues fall off due to cutting taxes for investors, one, and or a weak economic recovery generating weak tax revenues. 60%, historically, you look at the deficit, 60% is due to insufficient taxation. The other 40% is due to spending. Much of that is due to defense spending, leaving not that much in discretionary social programs spending, which these three stimulus bills are really about. Well, let's look at these three stimulus bills. The CARES Act last March. I forget what they call the December Act, the $900 billion, and now the ARP. Right? The media pushed the idea that the March CARES Act was almost $3 trillion. $3 trillion. $500 billion for unemployment benefits and checks, emergency checks. Right? Another $525 billion in grants to small businesses. Actually, you know, they allocated $650 billion, but they only spent $525 billion of that last year for small businesses. So that was like, you know, $1.1 trillion of actual spending. There was supposed to be another $1.3 trillion in loans to medium and large-sized businesses. Never happened. That was going through the Federal Reserve, the central bank, making those loans. Didn't make the loans. Well, I think it was like $150 billion in their Main Street program that actually got loaned out through that program before they canceled it because businesses weren't using it. Medium and large businesses did not need it, except for a few companies, you know, like the airlines and so forth that did use it. But business in general didn't take advantage of it. They didn't need it. Or if they needed money, they could get it on better terms, cheaper, by issuing corporate bonds, which they did, or borrowing from their banks rather than borrowing from the government, you see. So $1.1 trillion of the CARES Act last March was never even used. About $1.2 trillion was used. Another $1.1 trillion was not used. And then there was $650 billion in tax cuts last March on top of the Trump tax cuts. $4 trillion in 18, and another $429 billion, by the way, under Trump in 2019 in loopholes, corporate business loopholes. So, you know, it was even more than $4 trillion. And then in March, another $650 billion. I can't find anywhere evidence or data that says how much of that tax cut last March, $650 billion, was actually used by businesses. I can't find any data on that. My guess is it was mostly hoarded, did not result in actual tax cuts resulting in business investment. I mean, think about it. The economy is just about shut down. Why would businesses invest and expand? You know, you can give them all the tax cuts you want. They'll sit on it. They'll hoard it. But they won't necessarily, they'll take it, but they won't necessarily use it to invest and create jobs. And that's exactly what happens when you have an economic contraction of these dimensions and you try to get out of it with tax cuts. It didn't happen in 2009 and it didn't happen in 2020. Tax cuts do not create recovery when you're in such a deep contraction. They simply don't work. Oh, but they throw it at them anyway. It's a good excuse to give more to their buddies, you see. Congress, I'm talking about. Rich buddies. Campaign contributors. So, you know, we can assume that virtually none of that $650 billion actually got into the economy any more than the loans to medium and large businesses. $1 trillion plus got into the economy. So the CARES Act last year was really about $1.2 trillion of actual stimulus that actually got into the economy. And it was dissipated by late August. Because it was mitigation. It wasn't enough. Didn't create jobs. And then the economy began slipping back. And by the end of December looked pretty bleak. So Congress, in an emergency, quickly passed the $900 billion, which was mostly more money for small businesses and an extension of unemployment benefits to March and another $600 check. That's what that $900 billion was. Well, you know, it did have an effect here in the first quarter. Kept it from getting worse. runs out, or has already run out. You know, that's why they waited until the middle of March to pass Biden's ARP. Right? Let's let the spending from December peter out here, and then we'll throw more money into the pot, which is what they're doing. But at the same time, the economy is opening up because of the vaccine. So you're going to get a recovery of sort in this first quarter because of the vaccine and the reopening. But it's not going to be because of the $900 billion spent. That was mitigation, again, to put a floor under the collapse to buy time until the economy can reopen, which it is, and at the same time, we get another stimulus bill here. Well, let's look at the Biden stimulus bill. How much is it? The media is still throwing around the figure of $1.9 trillion, but it's not. That was what the House proposed, U.S. House of Representatives. It got to the Senate, and it got cut by $100 billion. Plus, they took out the $15 minimum wage, which would have provided $423 billion in the first year of stimulus into the economy. That would have been the biggest stimulus bill, $423 billion in 1 year. You know, you're raising wages, you know, almost doubling them in some cases, people getting $7.25 an hour to $15 an hour in many states. You know, you're almost doubling it. And there's 27 million people who would benefit from the minimum wage hike. Well, that was taken out. Who knows? You know, they've never said that it was worth $423 billion, but nonetheless, that was taken out by the Senate. Or you could say taken out by Joe Manchin and the other Democratic senator from Arizona who wanted it taken out. You see, the Republicans didn't cut that out. The Democrats cut it out themselves after Joe Biden said, oh, I'm not in favor of it. Yeah. Okay, so that was one reduction here from the original proposal. Another was, instead of $2,000 checks, people got $1,400 checks. And instead of the checks phasing out on households with annual income of $100,000, or per person, $100,000 per person, they cut that to $80,000 annual income. You'd get the full $1,400, you know, if your income was $75,000 annually or less, and then those who are making a little bit more would get a prorated version of that until they hit $80,000. Then people over $80,000 income got nothing under this particular program of checks. So the checks were higher, but though the number of people who got them were fewer. That was the change in the Senate, change in the checks. There's a change in the unemployment benefits. They had proposed $400 a week supplement on top of the regular state level. $400. You know, the CARES Act was $600. That expired back in August. But they were proposing $400 supplement, but that got reduced to $300 a week. And instead of it going through the rest of this year, December 31st, that too, that $300 a week extra will end September 6th. So the duration of that and the amount of that unemployment benefit was cut significantly. All right. And then there were other changes as well. A big item that we don't know what the actual spending effect will be is in the ARP program, the provision that state and local governments, tribal governments, would get $350 billion to spend. That's there, but will they spend it? You know, in 2009, remember, they got $300 billion and they sat on it. And they didn't hire jobs. And that extended the recovery. Will they do it again? You know, the total is almost $500 billion that state and local governments are going to be getting here. That's a big chunk of money. Are they going to spend it? Well, we shall see. Well, they'll spend some of it, no doubt, on COVID. But that's in the ARP plan. You know, the COVID spending is separate in addition to the $350 billion. That's why I say it comes to almost $500 billion when you look at the state and local governments hiring of checkers and those following up and administering, the vaccines and all the other related expenses with the COVID. It comes about $500 billion in this bill. That's a big chunk of money. Are they going to spend it? Well, if they don't, it doesn't get into the economy this year, and it doesn't become a stimulus. And in fact, the Congressional Budget Office, the research arm of Congress, comes out with estimations of the economic effects of these programs. And clearly, according to the CBO, only $1 trillion is going to be spent this year out of that $1.9 trillion, which is really $1.8 because the Senate took out $100 billion. It's $1.8 on paper over 10 years. $1 trillion in the first year. But that includes $350 billion being spent by state and local governments. And as I said, they're not going to spend all that, certainly not in the first year. So the net stimulus in the first year right now when we need it most will probably be around $800-900 billion. In other words, the same amount that Obama proposed in 2009. The same amount. The composition is better. You know, there are some tax cuts in the ARP, but they're mostly related to child tax credits, right? And child care tax credits. Those are all good, you know. But, you know, a lot of these tax credits only result in an income to spend when you file for your taxes. So that's no effect this year, if that's the case. You know, we got an $800-900 billion actual spending in the first year out of Biden's $1.8 trillion. Is that going big? No, not so big. Composition is better, but the magnitude is still not sufficient. Look, when this thing broke last March 2020, I wrote some articles. They're on my blog, jackrasmus.com. Go back there. You can see where I'm proposing. We needed an immediate $4 trillion spending program. $4 trillion immediately. What we've gotten is a dribbling out of around a trillion or less three times now. Once last March, once in December, and now again in the ARP, give or take a couple hundred billion, around a trillion, three times. If we had put that all up front, we would have gotten a much better bang for the buck in terms of stimulus to get out of this crisis. Right. So, keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. It's not $1.9 trillion. It's not even $1.8. According to the CBO, it's only one. And that assumes the states are going to spend it, and I'm not convinced that they will. The actual spending and the actual stimulus is far less than $1.9 trillion in the first year, which is the key here, right? Whether you're going to jumpstart the economy and get a recovery and not just a rebound. You see, you reopen the economy, you're going to get an economic rebound. In other words, you're restoring the lost economic activity. You're restoring. You're not growing. You're just restoring. And once it gets restored, that's it. Now what are you going to do to grow? And what about inflation? They're so worried about inflation. Well, okay, so we're going to spend $800-900 billion this year. Will that generate goods inflation? No, not enough. Now, having said that, I will say that inflation will rise, but not because of the deficits or the stimulus programs. Inflation will rise. Why? Look, businesses have not been able to raise prices and actually had to cut prices for a whole year now. And they are, many of them in the service sector in particular, in deep trouble, barely hanging on. At the first sight of reopening the economy, people coming back to work, they're going to anticipate more consumption and raise prices as much as they can. That's going to happen. It's already happening. Prices are rising. Inflation is occurring. But it's because of business trying to recoup lost revenue, not because of deficit spending. But you won't hear that argument. Now, because inflation is rising, financial markets are pushing up the value, and there was the rate on U.S. Treasury bonds, long-term bonds, 30-year bonds, escalating, even 10-year bonds, escalating right now. And the Fed Central Bank can't do anything about it because the Fed cannot control long-term rates. It can control short-term rates, you know, 90-day, one-year, two-year bills, and notes, five-year even. Yeah, it can influence those rates, but not the longer-term rates. That's determined by the condition of the economy. And in this case, what we got are speculators driving up the cost of the Treasury bonds. Now, the Federal Reserve Chair came out here, Powell, this week and said, we're going to stick with keeping interest rates low. Well, what he meant is short-term rates, keep them low. He can do that by pumping more money into the economy, into banks, into investors, into corporations. By the way, that's how the banks and the corporations really get bailed out in crises like this and in 2008 and 2009. It's not the Congress spending fiscal bills. No, that's not how they get bailed out. They get bailed out by the central bank, the Federal Reserve, who gives them free money. Come get it. How much? Well, since last March, $120 billion a month, every month, is being injected by the Federal Reserve, the central bank, into the private banks and corporations. $120 billion a month. Well, no wonder they don't need to borrow any money from the government. They're getting this free money, virtually low, no interest rates, at $120 billion a month, every month, and it's not stopping, and the Federal Reserve says it's not going to stop it for another couple of years. It's going to continue in 2021, 2022, maybe 23. A force feeding the capitalists $120 billion a month, whether they like it or not, want it or not. It's there. It's free. And what are the capitalists doing with it? Oh, they're spending it, but not on an investment that creates jobs. You know where they're spending it? They're buying stocks and other financial instruments. And that's why you've got a stock markets that keep booming, booming, booming. You know, stock market took another big jump when this whole thing got passed because they know the free money's going to be there for a long time. Think about it. You know, we got to have a crisis like this in order to get some spending, a few crumbs thrown at us, and get some reasonable unemployment benefits. And then they take it away as soon as they can. But the central bank just keeps feeding these capitalists over and over, month after month, year after year. All this free money. $120 billion, that's like $1.5 trillion a year, every year. How much has the Fed thrown in into the corporate sector here in the past year? Well, just look at their balance sheet. $4 trillion almost. $4 trillion. Yeah. Oh, you know, the Rand Pauls and the McConnells really choke on the fact that, we're going to get $400 a week instead of $300 a week in unemployment benefits. So they choke on that. They don't choke on the fact that their buddies are getting $120 billion a month every month. That's why they created the Federal Reserve, the central bank. So all this could be done without having to go through Congress and embarrass their elected political representatives. That's why the Fed is there, to subsidize capital incomes whenever there is a crisis. But now, in the 21st century, to subsidize it even when there isn't a crisis. It's just a big money subsidizing machine. That's what the central bank is. Keep those capital incomes going. And look, $120 billion, where's it going? It's not going into real investment. It's going into stocks and bonds and everything else. That's where it's going. And there you're getting inflation. Financial asset inflation, bubbles in stocks and other securities. Yeah, too much money chasing too few goods, but the goods are not real goods that you and I buy. The goods are stocks and derivatives and foreign exchange currencies and all the rest of the financial casino that capitalism in the 21st century has become. It's a casino, and they create the games for themselves that they bet on, and they get the money for free from the central bank. That's the game in the 21st century. That's what finance capitalism in the 21st century has become. And you know what? They make big gains because they aren't just a player. They are the house, to use the metaphor of a casino. The house. Yeah, the house rules. They make the house rules. They get their buddies in Congress to make the house rules on financial matters. So they fix the game, and then they go play the game, and they get rich and rich and richer. That's how it works. Right? Whoever has the gold makes the rules. It's called the golden rule, right? Well, it's the rich capitalists, particularly the finance capitalists, who got the gold, and they make the rules to keep the gold coming, you know? Keep that goose laying a golden egg. Whatever. And let's not rely on a fickle elected representatives to keep the game going. We'll create this parallel institution called the central bank that we will control and vet who gets on it. And they'll just keep the free money flowing to us. I mean, doesn't it boggle your mind how this system works? You know, do you wonder why there's so much income inequality that keeps growing and growing? No. Understand how the system works, and you will understand why they keep getting richer and richer and richer. And the rest of us have to keep fighting more and more for little crumbs through Congress. And then they control, increasingly, the Congress. Look. You know, the only reason that Trump lost is because COVID prevented the limitations and voter suppression on mail-in ballots and absentee ballots. They couldn't justify saying, no, there'll be no mail-in ballots when we had COVID. So people got to vote more. It overwhelmed. You know, the mail-in ballots, absentee ballots, overwhelmed all the voter suppression, particularly in the red states, which has become the norm. And right now we got a big battle over the next election. They're doing everything they can to stop mail-in ballots. Yes, particularly in the red states. You know, there are 250 state-level bills introduced in state legislatures to reduce absentee and mail-in and other voting that occurred in this past election. They want to cut it out. 250 bills. We have this one bill, you know, that wanted to institutionalize in the House of Representatives, wanted to institutionalize what happened during the recent election in terms of mail-in voting, called H.R. 1. It's dead on arrival in the Senate. stop that, expand voter suppression. That's what's going on next 2 years. Going to be a real fight in 2022. Going to be very hard for the Dems to hold on to Congress because they got narrow, thin margins there. And by the way, the census is going to give at least six more seats, 2020 census, to Republicans. So the margin's even more narrow, which means that Biden and the Dems have a very short window to actually do something, and they better go really big, and they better do everything they can to change those arcane anti-democratic rules in the Senate that makes the Senate an obstacle to democracy. You know, why do we even have a Senate? We shouldn't have a Senate. We should have a parliament, elected representatives. That's it. The rest of the world does. You know, the Senate's just there to block whatever the legislation of the people's representatives is about, you know, to dilute it and smother it and delay it and to block it. That's all it's there for. And if the Senate can't do it, then you have a unelected Supreme Court that does it. Obstacles to democracy abound. And then in the presidential executive branch, you got this thing called Electoral College. And we saw how even that can be manipulated. Electoral College, Senate rules, Supreme Court, which usurped the right to declare a law unconstitutional. Nothing in the Constitution says that. That the Supreme Court has the right to declare a law unconstitutional. Nothing in the Constitution says that. The Supreme Court simply usurped that power in the early 19th century. And we see the consequences of that. Yes. So we got a political fight going on for the last gasp of democracy in this country between now and 2022. And a lot will depend on whether the Democrats got the backbone to really push these economic programs that will really make a difference for people. Okay, they got a start here, but the start in the ARP is not all that great. I'm not all that impressed with it. You know, take it. But it's still a mitigation bill, and they better get a big infrastructure bill with shovel-ready projects to put people to work, or they're going to be toast in 2022. And then you think it was bad under Trump. Wait. Well, we'll see whether they got the backbone. You know, we'll see whether the Warrens and the Sanders are just crying in the wilderness over there in the progressive wing, or whether something can really be done. But they'll be toast if they don't really do something because, you know, this is just another mitigation bill, the ARP. It's about the same magnitude. Composition is better than the other two bills that were passed. And it's not going to cause inflation. If prices go up, it's because of gouging by corporations trying to recoup their losses. It has nothing to do. Those price increases would occur as the economy opened up regardless of the ARP. Deficits, government spending does not create inflation in goods and services. The central bank and free money to bankers and investors creates inflation in financial assets. Okay, that's it. Talk to you next week. Walk the streets, screaming now.